Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Brandon Muir, the executive director of Reclaim New York Center for Government Reform and Accountability. According to their website, reclaimnewyork.org, the Reclaim New York Center for Government Reform and Accountability is a nonpartisan 501c3 nonprofit organization focused on engaging all New Yorkers in a critical conversation about our future. Brandon Muir, tell us a little bit about yourself so that we know who we're talking to.
Sure. Well, as you said, I'm the executive director of Reclaim, and I have a background in civic engagement for as long as it can go. Started really abroad in Latin America, working with elected officials and political parties and civil society organizations. And it really shaped my belief that without a strong civil society and without a strong freedom of the press, the tendency for our public officials is to centralize power and make decisions and do as they please. And I've spent time in the consulting world with Deloitte, and more recently now have been with Reclaim New York since its inception in 2014.
So how's it going?
Well, we have a big task for sure in our hands, but it's an exciting challenge because the people on our team, a group of New Yorkers, we're 11 people now, believe deeply in the idea that the state isn't going in the right direction. But more importantly, there is a solution out there. And I know we've got a lot of issues with ethics and other stuff swirling around right now. But where we see an opening is for the citizens of New York to understand the issues and get engaged, because they're best positioned to make an impact and realign the trajectory of the state, if you will.
Brandon, if I can call you that, what is the most troubling thing that is facing us as a state right now?
You know, the most stark indicator that we lack civic engagement is voter turnout. But frankly, that's just one measurement. You know, you've got your attendance at town board meetings. You've got school board meetings. You got people reading the paper and following what's going on. And I go there first because there's a direct correlation between our ability to pay attention and engage and getting policies from Albany or from the local government that we believe in, that we want, that will help the state move forward. So I think when we see that we are 46th out of 50 in voter turnout, and we start to listen to the stories about who attends town board meetings and how these decisions are made in Albany, you know, things happen in a vacuum. And until we remind the public officials, if you will, that we're minding the store, that we're here, that we're paying attention, that we care, issues like lack of ethics reform or the second worst business climate in the country, the pension reform that's needed, all of these issues just really become secondary. Collectively, they make for an unstable economic environment. But at the backbone of all of those is the need for citizens to get involved.
Let's start with the ethics reform you've just mentioned. It's infuriating. I couldn't agree more. They come up each time very short, and they come up with some kind of very weak answer, even though the public wants more. What would you like to see done?
Well, I think we have to start big with this question, because we've now seen four alleged ethics reform bills pass in the past 5 years.
Exactly.
So at some point, this has to turn into a Charlie Brown moving the football incident, because we think we're going to get the solution, and then inevitably we get something which has no teeth and doesn't actually solve the problem. You know, this is an issue. The crazy part of this issue is 97% of New Yorkers want a solution. I mean, when was the last time we had an issue where all of New York was on the same side?
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a single one. So when that happens and we see that still no progress can be made, you have to wonder if there's a real intention up there in Albany to solve this problem.
Well, you don't wonder about it, nor do I. They don't want to solve the problem. That's how they got there. That's how they're making out. Why would they change it?
I don't think they will. And actually, that's sort of the core of our strategy, is that we need to stop looking for the solution to come from the top down. Now, corruption, you know, we've got a lot of people making progress. You look at the efforts of U.S. Attorney Barrera, you look at the efforts of Attorney General Schneiderman, you've got DAs, you've got people who are very actively, in my opinion, pushing to have peace and to have reform and to let public officials know that they're paying attention. But if you simply look at this as a mathematical equation, you've got a handful, maybe 100 people conducting oversight on more than 100,000 public officials across the state. They're simply outgunned. The more we outsource our civic duty to these actors, the U.S. attorneys that are working so hard, but don't accept some of that responsibility for ourselves, I think it's a fool's errand. I think that it's unrealistic that these individuals can solve the problem for us. So when I look for ethics reform, I think there's some very specific things that need to be done in Albany. You've got term limit issues. You've got,
by the way, listen, I'm all for it. The idea of term limits, you know, in New York City, you give people a chance to vote for term limits and they vote overwhelmingly for term limits. You gave them that right in the state, they would also vote overwhelmingly for it. But they'll never have initiative and referendum in New York because, again, those people aren't going to give it to them.
So I think part of that, though, is understanding that when you don't have responsive governance, when you lack transparency, it's time for the decisions to be made by the individuals to vote for someone else. But I think more importantly, even if you give me all of those, today's Brandon's wish list, and you just said, sir, you get every one of those, we would still not be in a position where real change is going to happen. And I cite again the fact that if people aren't paying attention, you can have all the laws you want, but if there's no concern that citizens are unhappy with how the money is being spent, with the type of government we're getting, then there's no impetus to change. And I really go back and I cite, when you look at the current approach to economic development, to how taxpayer dollars are being spent, that is where the corruption is at its core, because you've empowered public officials to spend exorbitant amounts of money all across the state through things like the Hunger Games and Startup New York and all this other stuff. But that is the enticement. That's where the corruption actually becomes real. If we moved away from that model and we said that the scope was going to be tighter and that we weren't going to try and fix a broken economic environment by cherry-picking winners, you begin to remove the need for the business community to pursue these legislators in such a way.
You know, I know that in the introduction I read for you, Brandon, we said that your board was not for profit, and yet your chairman is running the Trump campaign.
Sure.
How did that occur?
Well, I certainly wasn't in the room, so I can't speak to how it occurred, but I'll say this. Our board has been with us since the founding of the organization, and you're referring specifically to Steve Bannon, who's on the board.
Yeah.
He has taken a leave of absence from our organization. But here's the beauty, I think, of our organization. There's a lot of organizations that talk about policy and that push for policy. We consider ourselves not a think tank, but a do tank. So with our work, you can look at actions and not just what we put out in press releases, but what are we actually doing on the ground that will tell you, well, who is a Reclaim New York? And I point to two key areas where we've done the majority of our programming: affordability and transparency. In affordability, we've created an online calculator where a person can go on and enter their income, answer questions about how they spend their money, and in under 5 minutes, you see your total tax bill across income and property sales and excise tax. This speaks directly to our need to educate citizens about the reality of the economic environment here. The second area is transparency. We're using Freedom of Information Law to request the fiscal year checkbook from 2014 on from every school district, village, town, and county across the entire state, 3,400 entities of government. And where we've had problems, specifically the town of Oyster Bay on Long Island, who said, we don't have to give you that information, take a hike. So we took a hike down to our attorney's office and we filed an Article 78 lawsuit against them to force them to disclose this information. This is a group of Republicans, and it's the first entity that we sued. We're now in a lawsuit with the town of Babylon, who happens to be Democrats, over the same issue. So I share those examples because they directly represent the kind of work we're doing, which is nonpartisan to its core. Affordability and transparency are not partisan issues. And then the way we pursue our programming is blind to the idea that it's a left or right issue.
Let's talk a little bit about Governor Cuomo. How's he doing?
Well, we would like to see better policy. And I point to ethics reform as a key indicator that we're not moving in the right direction. But more importantly, in a lot of ways, is the approach to getting New York's economy back on track. So last week, we saw the job growth numbers come out, 1.9% growth across the country. New York is at 1.6%. Almost 100% of that growth happened downstate. So what are we doing to encourage sustainable economic growth across the state? And by and large, the answer has been we're trying to pick winners. We are playing, we being the administration and the legislature, we're playing venture capitalist. We're running around acting like we have the skill set and the knowledge and the foresight to pick the next big thing. And I think as people on Wall Street will tell you, that's exceptionally hard to do, and it's unrealistic. More importantly, though, it's a really bad use of taxpayer dollars. What we would like to see is decisions made that improve the economic environment for businesses and for citizens across the board. So, yes, that means lower tax rates, but there's a host of other steps that could be taken to make us more competitive. We're next to last. We're beating New Jersey and nobody else right now. This is an issue that impacts business owners, but it impacts consumers as well. The need to go and buy food from the store and buying a cheeseburger on one side of the Holland Tunnel for $8 and $6 on the other side, I mean, that goes back to economic policies coming out of Albany that are not in the best interest of the consumer.
Now, the governor, you've asked the governor for information about the so-called Buffalo Billions, which leads us into a discussion as to how that's going. I mean, here's a guy who says, as you say, let's put $1 billion into the Buffalo area. But then comes the stench of who gave money and who got contracts. Does that bother you?
It bothers me, but again, I think we have to look at the bigger picture here. Is are we surprised that a governor and a legislature that said they were working on an ethics bill passed it in an unethical manner? Are we surprised that a governor and a legislature that alleges they're growing the economy is running around and giving, you know, essentially kickbacks? I mean, we're talking about buying buildings for people. In some cases, we're talking about economic subsidies or tax breaks down the road, which is a better form of economic development than straight giveaways. But we've seen this same story play out so many times. And again, this isn't a partisan left or right issue. This approach to economic development has happened in administrations on both sides of the aisle. And it's centered on this belief that if I just have a little bit more money, I can go out there and attract business. The problem is, you look at states who have the best economic growth records over the past decade, and what they did was create a low-tax environment for everybody, and they made their economic environment palatable. They made it a choice where I don't have to twist your arm with a bunch of candy and freebies. They said, you're a logical individual, you're a rational human being who wants to create a company. We've created an environment where you can do that. And it's a better environment than the other 49 options. So come here.
Well, wait, let me ask you this. The governor has come up with a plan, as you know, at SUNY, whereas if you attach yourself, if your business is acceptable, you attach yourself to a SUNY school, you get a tax break for 10 years. There are many of us, I'm a former SUNY professor for 40 of them, who think that there is something about doing this that may really be wrong. What's your reaction?
If I've been a business owner in New York for 1 year or 10 years, why should I, as a business owner, have to pay for the tax breaks of some guy who wants to move here from New Hampshire or some guy who lives right next to me who thinks he has a business idea and he wants to open that idea? Because that's what we effectively force business owners to do. They have to pay for the ideas of other people who want to start companies when those people get tax breaks. At the end of the day, we need taxes to fund our government. We believe in lower taxes than the current rates, but we're not one of these organizations that say, hey, all taxes should go away. That's not realistic. The question is, how do you entice business to relocate here or grow here? And when you give one guy a tax break because of where he locates his company, or because he decides he's going to start up a business in the new coolest industry that we haven't heard about yet, you're effectively saying to the business owner who's been, you know, struggling to survive in this environment for 1, 10, 5, 20 years, you're not important enough to our plan, to our future in the state. So I don't believe anytime you've created a policy which pits one business owner against another, showing favoritism, you're going to have a good outcome. It's not an optimal model. It's been disproven multiple times in multiple countries and multiple cities across the world. But more importantly, we need to be telling New Yorkers that this policy we're pushing is fair, is obvious, is readable, is digestible. It doesn't require a team of accountants and lawyers to get through it. Then and only then are we going to see, you know, the trips that Governor Perry used to make up here every weekend stop. Then we will be competitive. Then there will not be the reason.
Governor Perry of Texas, who used to come and try to attract our people.
And you can't blame the guy. I mean, he's got to defend his state and grow his state. But that, to me, is an indicator that there's a problem. When we have to offer businesses enticements to say, hey, we know it's really difficult, so if you just move there and you hire some students and you work in this industry, we'll make it easier for you.
Okay, I want to switch because I'm running out of time here, and it's really important. The New York State Senate is now up for grabs. We know that. Both the Republicans and the Democrats are fighting like crazy. The governor says he's for making it Democratic, and yet his lips say one thing, his actions say another thing. Is it healthy, based on everything you've told us now, to have Democrats in both houses of the legislature?
Well, again, I would say we are a nonpartisan organization.
We know this.
And, you know, to be direct, we're more interested in the policies that they're going to support.
Well, policy comes out of politics, doesn't it? I mean,
well,
yeah.
You know, in the past, maybe that's been true, but I'm going to cite the NFIB report that came out last week. Mike Durant shared the report, which shows that...
That's National Federation of Independent Businesses?
That's correct.
Okay.
The national report that compares the voting records of Republicans to Democrats. Again, this is a nonpartisan organization that's looking out for the interests of business owners, and what they found no longer supports that theory. You've got bad policy coming out of Republicans and Democrats. And in fact, you've got good policy coming out of Republican and Democrats. So, you know, I think the old battle lines that we want to draw don't hold up anymore. And I think more importantly, people are less interested in whether we elect a Democrat or Republican. We want to see substantive reform around the issues that we've discussed, pensions and cost of doing business and the tax environment. There's a host of problems that need to be solved. I don't think that New Yorkers give two flips if it's coming from the left or right side of the aisle.
So your rhetoric, it sounds to me now, you know, there's an old Mel Brooks record which goes this way, but it sounds to me, like, you know, your talk, it sounds more Republican than Democratic. Would you agree with that?
No, because I go back to our two issues, you know, transparency and affordability. These are not partisan issues. The idea that we need a better tax environment and we need to pursue policies that we see in other states doesn't make it a Democratic policy.
Brandon, isn't it so that if you took a wide panorama of Republican rhetoric versus Democratic rhetoric, you would find that Republicans inevitably are talking about lower taxes, and quite often
sure.
Democrats are talking about higher taxes, right?
Well, again, I don't agree, because we just saw, you know, up and around Buffalo, you've got Senate Democrats attacking Republicans for raising taxes and vice versa. So I don't think those lines hold up anymore. And I'm really not trying to dodge your question. It's a fair question. I think the point is, it's not about the rhetoric, and we don't see rhetoric matching actions. We saw a governor listen to New York say resoundingly, we need ethics reform. this whole ethics bill was a charade and an attack on transparency.
Agree.
So I think when we don't see people, public officials, following the requests of citizens, we see them using talking points but not backing that up with action. We just simply pivot and say, hey, everybody, listen, citizen engagement is the cure for corruption.
Yeah,
citizen engagement is the cure for better policy.
It's true. It's all
We've
true.
Got to put it...
Look, it's all true. It's what I've spent my life trying to develop here.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't happen, without some push. I have to think Preet Bharara is, of course, the great hero of our time. And yet I'm astounded when I hear Hillary Clinton in a press conference saying it's too early to think of whether he should be reappointed. I hear Chuck Schumer saying basically the same thing, and he's the guy who put him there.
Right.
I'm very, very concerned about that, because I think of all the things that are working for governmental reform right now, it is the process of that Bharara, who puts a speaker and a majority leader, at least tends to send them on their way towards jail, sends that right message. And I am a big fan of this kind of change for that reason. Are you disturbed by the fact that you're hearing these things?
Extremely. And I think the idea that this bill comes out and is a very direct attack on freedom of speech and issue advocacy, I mean, it did not take away the potential for corruption. It did not increase transparency. It did not strengthen FOIL. It did not create term limits. It didn't do all the things it was alleged to do. But what it did do, and this is something that you're going to see in the coming weeks and months, from a host of good government organizations on the left and on the right and the nonpartisan and the partisan, it has stepped right on the neck of the First Amendment. And this is a very serious issue, because these are the organizations, ours included, that are interested
in solving this. And ours included, but all public radio stations.
And that's, I said at the start that you need a very active and vibrant civil society, and you need a very active and vibrant journalist community. You need investigative journalism. You need the oversight of a Preet, because only when all of those pieces work in tandem does responsive governments get delivered. And I go back to this idea that, this ethics bill was passed in an unethical fashion. Mm-hmm. It didn't have teeth. We're no better off than we were 3 months ago.
We may be worse off, because as you suggest, Brandon, the fact is that they said, okay, if you want ethics reform, we'll reform you. We'll make you disclose your donors.
Right.
It's crazy. It's really crazy.
I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
We, as I mentioned, we filed a lawsuit against the town of Oyster Bay. We said we really wanted to go out for a regional director on Long Island and meet with people in the community and talk about this specific piece of litigation. And we talked to several individuals who said, we think what you're doing is great. We've got to hold these people accountable. We want to see how our tax dollars are being spent. Great. Would you like to come on our channel and talk about that? Oh, no, I can't put my face on this. And I said, well, what do you mean? And they said, I'll give you a quote. You can take an audio, but I need you to blur out my face because I fear retribution.
Well, sure.
It was a stark moment, because when we're in a situation with these, especially with local government, but we're in a situation where people believe something but are afraid to speak out against it, this goes to the heart of this bill that was passed. I will now talk to someone and say, hey, we're doing some great stuff. Would you be willing to donate? Sure, here's $15. And sure, here's $25. But for someone who makes a bigger commitment, they are on the hook now with their name and their address that will be publicly disclosed. And that's a really huge statement that has not been made in this country anywhere before.
Well, Brandon, I have to stop it there, but you've been a terrific guest. We appreciate your coming on very much. I certainly agree with most of what you're saying. I really do. And I do want to thank you for the time you've spent with us. We're out of time. Our guest has been Brandon Muir, the executive director of the Reclaim New York Center for Government Reform and Accountability. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you again for having me, and look forward to talking soon.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.